أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، ولعنة الله الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من ليلتنا هذه إلى قيام يوم الدين. My respected shuyukh, elders, brothers and sisters in Islam and Iman, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tonight we have gathered here with the intention of commemorating the shahada of the daughter of Rasulullah, the one who is known as the leader of the women of all the worlds, Al-Batul Al-Zahra, Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra. And on this anniversary of her martyrdom, I would like to first of all send my condolences to Imam Al-Hujjah, the Imam of our time. And to all the believers and those who have the mahabba of Sayyidatu Fatima al-Zahra in their hearts. This is the last of the series of majalis that I've had the tawfiq to be with you for. And on this, I would like to acknowledge the efforts of all of those who helped to organize and helped to sponsor and are in any way involved with these programs, those who attend from near and from far, those who contribute even in the form of making dua for all of those who are involved. May Allah accept all your efforts. And from my side, if there's anything that we've said or done, please forgive us. Tonight I would like to, inshallah, speak about this great lady, Sayyida Fatima, in the light of this topic, which is, what does it take to be a good person who does good things? I've chosen this topic after a lot of thought, because I feel that one of the positive things that we see among the mu'mineen is this desire to do good. That we have this incredible body of teachings and wisdom. We've been shown the path of righteousness, the path of truth. Now how can we take that and give it to others? And I see that excitement and that enthusiasm in the form of different activities and activism and projects. However, one of the potential dangers that we may face going down the road is that we are living in a society where this concept of doing good and being a good person is defined in the terms of a secular humanistic perspective. Doing good and being a good person can be something which involves doing charity, doing a lot of charity, You think about who are the people, maybe from that perspective, who are the most important people around. They might say someone like Bill Gates, because after all, he and his wife are the biggest contributors and donors, so they're considered to be the best of people because they do the most good. What we'd like to do tonight is to use the example of Sayyida Fatima to look at this concept of what does it mean to be a good person? And what an excellent example to choose. In one hadith, we're told that when Rasulullah wishes to introduce his daughter to his companions, he tells them, وَأَمَّا إِبْنَتِي فَاطِمَةً فَإِنَّهَا سَيِّدَةُ نِسَاءِ الْعَالَمِينَ مِنَ الْأَوَّلِينَ وَالْآخِرِينَ. If you want me to introduce my daughter, Fatima, then you should know that she is the leader of the women of all the worlds, from the first and from the last, the leader. But how do we understand this term leader? What does it mean for Fatima Zahra to be the leader? We know that she was somebody who was extremely generous. You've heard the stories of the beggars who come to her door who never are refused her charity. You may have heard of that one lady who comes to her and she says, I have a question for you. My mother has reached an age where no longer is she able to say her prayers as she used to say her prayers. I want you to please tell me, how can she say them in a way that would still be correct? Sayyida Fatima answers her. She says that, do you mind if I ask you another question? She asks her the other question. Sayyida Fatima answers that one as well too. Another question? Yes, go ahead. Answer. A fourth question, a fifth question. She keeps on asking questions. And finally she comes to. She realizes she asked so many questions and she feels embarrassed. After all, this is the daughter of the Prophet. Maybe she has other things to do. She asks her, she says that, it seems that I've been a trouble to you. I've taken a lot of your time. How does Sayyida Fatima answer her? She says that whatever question you may have, ask it. Do not feel shy. I'm here for you. Even with her knowledge, she was generous. She was a giver. What does it mean to be a giver? If we take these two qualities of being a leader and being one who is charitable, one who gives, and we define them from a secular humanistic perspective, we understand one thing. But when we look at it from an Islamic perspective, we see that the definition of being a leader and the definition of being one who is charitable, the definition of being one who is a good person fundamentally differs. It's something much deeper than just doing a lot of charity work, and just getting out there into the streets and just doing something. No, there's something deeper to it. Let us go to the verse in the Quran, in Surah Al-Baqarah, where Allah describes what does it mean to be an extremely good person. There's this term which is known as birr. Birr is One is the concept of being expansive in goodness, meaning being very, very good, doing a lot of good. That's what birr means. And one who possesses that quality of doing a lot of good, somebody who's a really good person, in Arabic, that person is called barr. And in the plural of that word is abrar. You may have heard this before, abrar. When Allah wants to describe for us what does it take to be one who is an extremely good person, this is what he says. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ليس البر أن تولوا وجوهكم قبل المشرق والمغرب. Being extremely good person is not just about turning your head to the east and to the west. This refers to a dispute, an issue that had arisen about the direction of the Qibla, and people were arguing this way and that way because Allah had commanded that it be towards the Kaaba. And they wish to keep on facing towards Baytul Maqdas or whatever it is that they had in mind. Allah says, no, if this is what you're going to occupy yourselves with, let me define for you what does it mean to be somebody who is truly good? What is true goodness? وَلَكِنَّ الْبِرَّ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ وَالْمَلَائِكَةِ وَالْكِتَابِ وَالنَّبِيِّينَ. What is goodness? Allah doesn't define goodness in an abstract way now. Now He goes right into the example. He defines the concept of goodness by describing the person who is extremely good. Who is that person? Somebody who, number one, who has iman in Allah and the Day of Judgment, and in the hereafter, and in the angels, and in the book, and the prophets. That's at one level. That if you want to be extremely good, you have to have your ideological foundations in place. They have to be cemented. You have to have belief. You have to know what's true from what's false. That's the first level. The second level, وَآتَ الْمَالَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ ذَوِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ وَابْنَ السَّبِيلِ وَالسَّائِلِينَ وَفِي الرِّقَابِ. It's somebody who is very charitable. What do they give? They give from the possessions that they have, despite having love for those, or in another translation would be having love for Allah, to their near ones, to the orphans, to the poor, those who are stranded, and those who are beggars, and those who are enslaved. But it doesn't just stop there. It's not just about giving charity. Charity is one wing that you need in order to fly and to qualify as one who is extremely good from the Quranic perspective. That has to be coupled with another wing. What is that other wing? وَأَقَامَ الصَّلَاةَ وَآتَ الزَّكَاةَ. It has to be, you have to have the wing of ibadah as well. Without ibadah, that charity has no meaning. It doesn't do anything in terms of qualifying as being good from the perspective of Allah. وَآتَ الزَّكَاةَ. They give the charity which is mandated upon them, or those which are recommended from Allah. That's a second level. There's a third level as well too, which has to do with the ethical qualities of these people. وَالْمُوفُونَ بِأَحْدِهِمْ. When they make a promise, they fulfill that promise. إِذَا أَحَدُوا وَالصَّابِرِينَ فِي الْبَأْسَاءِ. And those who are patient in difficult times. When Allama Tabatabai talks about these two qualities, he says that either you can say that these two ethical qualities of fulfilling one's promise and being patient in times of difficulty, either you can say that within them is encompassed the entirety of all the ethical qualities that we're called to have in Islam, or you could say that they are the initial sort of entry points into discovering the rest of those qualities, meaning that there's a lot of meaning behind these words. So to summarize the verse, what Allah is telling us is that in order for somebody to be an extremely good person, it's not just a matter of going out there and doing charity work. But there's a whole framework that has to be established, which has three levels: the belief, the actions, and the ethical qualities. Now let's go back to the example of Sayyidatu Nisa al-Alameen. Is it right then for us to say that if Fatima is a good person and she's, the Prophet defines her as being the leader, and she's somebody who's known as so generous and so charitable, is it right for us to say that, okay, let's come up with a list of the most generous people in the world, the best of philanthropists and the best of leaders, and put her on that list as well? Is it right for us to, for example, come up with, let's say, a big poster advertising the best of people? For example, people like, say, Mahatma Gandhi and Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and I don't know who else. All those people who are known in the Western secular society as being great people and really good people. And let's add Sayyida Fatima to that list as well too. Would that be something that's correct to do? Sometimes you see these types of posters where they take sometimes even the names of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, who told us, La yuqasu bina ahadun. No one can be compared to us. No one. Have you ever wondered about the nature of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam? Particularly about Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra. Why is it that from the very beginning, everything about her, Allah reveals Quran in honor of it? When she's born, Allah reveals a whole surah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, inna a'atainaka al-kawthar, fasalli li rabbika wanhar, inna shani'aka huwal abtar. A whole surah of the Quran. How many people are born every second? throughout the generations. But for her birth, a special surah is revealed. Surah Al-Qadr. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Inna anzalnahu fi laylatul qadr. Wa ma adraka ma laylatul qadr. According to tafsir of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, the laylatul qadr is Fatima al-Zahra. Why is she laylatul qadr? One of the explanations is because all of the perfection and beauty that she manifested, she was somebody who did so realizing that it was not from herself, that she was but a mirror for the light of Allah. It is only in the night time, the pure night time, that a light can be seen. If you have a light which you're going to light up, if you want to see it properly, clearly, you have to turn off everything, all the other lights first. That's when you can see that light burning. If the other lights are there, this light isn't going to shine as bright. But she is Laylatul Qadr. She is that night where the beauty of Allah can be displayed in a way that cannot be displayed from anybody else. How many people throughout history have sacrificed a bit of food for somebody else? How many people, even today, are going hungry a little bit in order to help somebody else? But when Fatima al-Zahra alayha salam sacrifices her food, she is able to pull down an entire surah dedicating this act of charity for her and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Hal ata 'ala al-insani hina min ad-dahri lam yakun shay'an madhkura. إن الأبرار يشربون من كأس كان مزاجها كافورا عينا يشرب بها عباد الله. And then it goes on. ويطعمون الطعام على حبه مسكينا ويتيما وأسيرا. This is something so great that Allah doesn't even resort to one verse to describe it, a whole surah. That how did they give? ويطعمون الطعام على حبه مسكينا ويتيما وأسيرا. If we want to know what distinguishes her and why her being a leader and her being a charitable figure is something, and her being a good person is something that we cannot compare to a secular humanist, we only have to look at this surah. That when she gives and she does good, she does so with certain qualities. Ala hubbihi. Ala hubbihi. She gives with that love. وَيَخَافُونَ يَوْمًا كَانَ شَرُّهُ مُسْتَطِيرًا. They, when she gives and they give, they do so with that fear of having to be responsible for their actions, and so on and so forth. Every quality that was described in that verse about birr, every one of them is then reflected in Surah Al-Dahr, where Allah describes Sayyida Fatima and the Ahlul Bayt and their sacrifice. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. If we want to understand what the difference is between the Islamic perspective of somebody who's a good person, and we want to look at the message of that verse and take the example of Sayyida Fatima, one of the ways that we can do so is a very simple breakdown that the ulama have given us. What they tell us is that if you want to know what is goodness, you can't just look at the number of good things that somebody does or the amount of money that they're given or anything like that. No. You have to break it down to two fundamental points. Number one, husnul fa'il, and number two is husnul fi'l. Husnul fa'il meaning the goodness of the one who is doing that good act. In Islam, that has huge importance. It's not just about what you do, but what is the state of your being when you do what you do. There was a very wealthy person who is known as a philanthropist. Every time there was any project, people would come to his door, knock on it, and they would never go empty-handed. He was so wealthy, but yet so humble that he didn't even own his own car. Everywhere he went to, he would take public transportation. Eventually, he reaches old age, and then he leaves this world. He enters into a dream of one of the ulama. And the alim recognizes him. He was famous. Everyone participated in his funeral. They missed him. He asks him, he says, that what is your situation now? After all that giving and all that charitable work that you did, where are you right now? He tells him that actually, every single thing that I gave, all of it went to the wind. All of it got washed away. Nothing helped me. You know why? Because I did all of it with the slight intention of wanting to show off to other people. But there's only one thing that did count for me. There was one time when I was at the bus station waiting for the bus because I didn't have a car, and there was a young man who came to me, and he started presenting his case. He said that he didn't know me, I didn't know him. He says that I'm a young person, I wish to get married, I don't have enough money to get married. I'm concerned that if I don't get married, I'm going to fall into sin. So can you please help me? Without looking at him, I just put my hand in my pocket, he says in the dream. Whatever was there, and it wasn't even that much, I gave it to him. But that amount that I gave, that was the only thing that saved me. That was it. It's not about the quantity that's given. The state of being, the ikhlas of that person. وَيُطْعِمُونَ الطَّعَامَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ. You have to have... Then Allah says, إِنَّمَا نُطْعِمُكُمْ لِوَجْهِ اللَّهِ لَا نُرِيدُ مِنْكُمْ جَزَاءً وَلَا شُكُورًا. When the Ahlul Bayt gave, what is it that was outstanding about it? Is that they did so, they didn't want anything in return. Purely for the sake of Allah. Whatever what is that they were doing. We don't even want any reward from you or any thanks from you. This is only for Allah. Another thing that we see from Sayyidah Fatima and why she's the leader, why she's the one who is truly a great person, is that she had that taqwa. Somebody who would shake in prayer when she would stand in front of her Lord. When such a person does something which is good, the value of it is multiple fold than somebody who doesn't have that taqwa. You know that same story that we began with where she's teaching that lady who's coming to her? It doesn't just end where we ended it. After telling her that you keep on asking me, what happens then is she explains something to her. She says that, you know, she gives her an example. She says that you're asking me these questions. Okay, now imagine that there was somebody who was tasked to carry a heavy load from one place to another place. And they were to receive 100 coins of compensation for what they're doing. Would that person, and 100 coins at that time was like a lot of money, would that person not agree to do it? That lady says that, yeah, of course, it's a pretty good deal. So then Sayyidah Fatima tells her that every time I answer one of your questions, imagine that the entire world, from the ground to the skies, was filled with pearls. Pearls being an expensive, precious jewelry. If even all of that were to be valued, what I am getting from answering each one of your questions is more than that. So why should I not answer your questions? Now don't get this story wrong. It's not the case. Sayyidah Fatima, na'udhu billah, is not saying that she's doing this action, this good act, for the sake of reward, because she wants to get this thawab. No. We already know from the Quran, لا نريد منكم جزاء ولا شكورا. What they do is for the sake of Allah. But what we can understand is that the value of the actions of this lady, whatever it may be, even as simple as answering a question, because of her state, because of her taqwa, it has so much value in the eyes of Allah. A normal teacher, of course, their reward is something that we cannot fathom, because the value of a teacher, the teacher is doing the work of a prophet. And so we can't understand the value of what they do. But perhaps we could say that if it's just an ordinary person, the merit of what they're doing isn't the same as the merit of Sayyidah Fatima. This lady who had that taqwa and the ikhlas, that's how she's able to be at this position of being the best of the people and being the leader. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. That's one quality, husnul fa'il, that in order to determine the goodness and the value of an action, you have to look at the person themselves. How much taqwa do they have? How much ikhlas do they have? And we can learn from that in our own activities, in our own activism, in our own charity. If it's the case that we're thinking that doing charitable acts and working on projects is something we can do without working on ourselves, then we've lost out on the whole picture. That's not somebody who's a good person from the perspective of Allah, perspective of the Quran, or perspective of the Ahlul Bayt. But there's a second quality as well too, which is husnul fi'al. That when somebody does something, they have to do something which is good. Not just that they are a good person, but what they are doing has to be good as well too. But this is very important. That if we want to be a good person and do good things, we have to do the right thing. Not just something that we think is good. I'll give you an example from the world of charity. These days, there's a trend of wanting to go away and help the underprivileged. Let me take a year off from school, for example. Let me go to like some foreign country. I'll put in my time. And after all, you know, we've exploited them and used their products for all this time. Let me go and help them out a little bit. For example, Cambodia, maybe we've used, I don't know, t-shirts and products from Cambodia. That's the extent to which we know about that country. You might have seen it on the label of our t-shirts. Some people like to go to countries like Cambodia and say, let me go and help the orphans. 1 year of my time, I'll go and I'll volunteer my time too. I don't need to get paid. When I come back, alhamdulillah, I've volunteered. I've done something good. Actually, when you go to people who study these things, they might tell you that, you know what, you're better off staying home. You're being fooled. You think that you're doing something good? Actually, when you go, you're creating havoc. You think that you're doing something good, and you get this rush, this feeling that, oh, okay, I'm doing all this charity, and I'm such a great person. Actually, you're creating havoc. Why? Because don't you see that they've created a whole business out of this whole thing? They have orphanages of which maybe 90% of the so-called orphans aren't really orphans. In fact, people are vying with each other to send their kids off to these orphanages so they don't have to bear the cost of taking care of them at home. They put on a whole act when you go there and you see the orphanage, they come out and they say, okay, we're so, you know, they have tourists who come in and it's like, you know, please help us, we're so poor. Sometimes they even keep the conditions in like low conditions so that people can think that, oh, these people really need some money, I gotta go help them. When people from the outside go and help there, they actually end up taking away jobs from the local people because they're working for free. The local people need money. So they're off and they're begging on the streets. Right? This act of charity has created beggars. You go for 1 year and you get attached to these orphan children. Even let's say that there are some orphan children there. What happens then? After 1 year, you're gone. You've created this bond that now you're going to break for them. Isn't that traumatic for the children? They say, why don't you spend that time and try to figure out how to reconnect these children to families that can foster them and nurture them and take care of them? That's what would be a smarter thing to do. That's just one example, brothers and sisters, of how sometimes we can think that something is good, but actually it's not good. It's creating havoc. I want to tell you about somebody who's a famous figure from history. He was somebody who became a Muslim in the early times, during the time of our Prophet. He was somebody who, after the successorship of Imam Ali, when Imam Ali became the Khalifa, he joins him in the Battle of Jamal. He's fighting on the side of Imam Ali. He's somebody who initially pays allegiance to Imam Hassan. He is somebody who, from Kufa, writes a letter inviting Imam Hussein to come to Kufa. He's somebody who is present even in Karbala. He's somebody who even builds a masjid with his own money. Now, with that resume, right, with that profile, you would think that, oh, this person is a good person. He's a philanthropist. He's an excellent, good person who's doing a lot of good things. But if we go and look at who this person actually is, and I'll give you his name. His name is Shabath ibn Rib'i. Maybe you've heard of him. Yeah, it's true that he was a Muslim, but after the death of the Prophet, he followed the teachings of a false prophet. He became an apostate. And not only that, he was the mu'adhin for this lady who claimed that she was the prophet after our prophet. He was the mu'adhin for her. It's true that he participated in the Battle of Jamal and he was with Imam Ali alayhi salam, but afterwards, he left him and he joined the Khawarij. It's true that he was part of the army of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, he was with him, but afterwards, he was one of the six who were tempted and were bribed by Muawiyah to assassinate Imam Hassan alayhi salam. It's true that he wrote a letter to Imam Hussein inviting him to Kufa, but he was the one who dispersed the 30,000 people who had gathered around Muslim ibn Aqil in Kufa. It's true that he was present in Karbala, but he was present on the enemy army's side. And it's true that he built a masjid, but you know why he built that masjid? He built it out of thankfulness to Allah because Hussein had been killed. Now, brothers and sisters, the point I'm trying to make, I'm using an extreme example for the shock value of it on purpose, because the point is that not every action, just because it seems to be good, is necessarily a good act. Here's a person who's a masjid builder, but yet he's accursed. All of his money is fire for him. What's lacking here? What's lacking is something called basira, something called insight, something called awareness of what needs to be done, what is the right thing to do. Allah tells our Prophet in Surah Yusuf, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قل هذه سبيلي أدعو إلى الله على بصيرة أنا ومن اتبعني. Say, this is my way. I invite to Allah. Prophet is talking about the religion of Islam. The religion of Islam is a path to Allah. Say, this is my way. I invite to Allah, but in what manner? Ala basiratin. Ana wa man ittabani, myself and all those who follow me. The Prophet doesn't want just anybody who has good intentions and say, okay, let me go and join you and do good things. No. He wants somebody who has basira, who has vision, who has insight, and sees what is the right thing to do. And when they know the right thing to do, that's when they act upon it. Knowing the right thing to do is something which sometimes is difficult for us, brothers and sisters. Sometimes we get caught up in the moment and we just join with the bandwagon and start doing things, but we don't think and see, is this really what is the most pleasing to the Imam of my time at this time? There was a group of professors from the University of Berkeley in California who pay a visit to Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, Hafidhahullah. Ayatollah Jawadi was one of our greatest scholars. He had written a book known as Islam wa Muhit Zisti, Islam and the Environment. They're impressed by this. They themselves are experts in the environment. They want to have an exchange of ideas. So they go to, this was just recently, they go to this great scholar and they wish to discuss with him about, you know, the problems in environment, pollution, and so on and so forth. And they're thinking that the topic of discussion is going to be about maybe things like, you know, emissions from cars, the greenhouse gases, the ozone layer, the aerosol sprays, and all these types of things that they discuss typically when talking about what's wrong with the environment. But what does Ayatollah Jawadi do when they're in his presence? He says that, look at, let's, and I'm paraphrasing here based on what an account that was related to me, let's talk not about these apparent causes of the destroying the environment. Let's talk about the causes behind those causes. Let's talk about inequality. Let's talk about injustice. Let's talk about exploitation and those people and those institutions and those governments that are supporting those policies which are destroying the environment. Let's talk about dhulm. If you want to talk about the environment, how can you talk about it without talking about dhulm? You see the insight that this man has. That when we do things, we have to have insight, know what the right thing is to do in all situations. We have a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam where he says that Al-Amilu ala ghayri basiratin, somebody who does things, I'm an activist, I have all these projects, I'm doing all these things, but ala ghayri basiratin, without having that insight and knowledge, kasairi ala ghayri tariq, is like somebody who's traveling but not on the path. What happens if you go off the path? لَا تَزِيدَهُ كَثْرَةُ السُّرْعَةِ إِلَّا بُعَدًا. The only thing that going faster and faster helps him to do is to go farther and farther away from his target. Look at the beauty of the words of Imam Ali Islam. Before I do something, I have to understand what is the right path. Is this the path that's leading me to the pleasure of Allah and the pleasure of my Imam? Then I need to act, not that I'll find it as I go along. This is very important, brothers and sisters, that we understand that what is it that we have to do. Sometimes when you look at the types of activities and projects, we see that there's a lot of good intention, but not a lot of thought behind that. One thing that we need to encourage is the process of thinking and planning. Before we act, let's first come up with a plan and see what is the, you know, strategy. We do that in business world all the time. Let's take this and apply it even when it comes to our community activities as well too. One of the things of developing basira is the process of learning. If I'm all excited about getting involved in activism and in projects and all these things, but I don't have that same enthusiasm for learning, then I should know that something is wrong here. Because after all, basira and knowing that path requires seeking that knowledge. One of the biggest projects that many of us are working on and involved in is the project of raising children. Why is it that when parenting seminars and classes are held, there's so little interest in the community? It should be the case that anybody who's a parent or is going to be a parent in the future or is helping parents parent should be involved in these type of things. And if it's the case that we have that humility to realize that our basira may be limited, because after all, we're limited beings, then we should be consulting and trying to benefit from the basira of others who have that basira. Let's go back to the example of Sayyida Fatima, and then inshallah we'll go to the Masaib. What was the level of basira of Fatima al-Zahra? Let me give you one example. When her mother, Sayyida Khadija al-Kubra alayha salam, passed away when Fatima was just 4 years old, according to historical narrations, the Prophet hands over the training and rearing of Sayyida Fatima to his wife, Salama, after he marries her. What does Salama say? She herself was one of the good wives of the Prophet. She was a lover of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. What does she say? She says that when Fatima was handed over to me and I was told that I'm supposed to train her and teach her, I found that she was more knowledgeable than even I was. It wasn't the case that I was teaching her, she was teaching me. Because for whatever it was, she already had the knowledge of that thing. Every single thing she had knowledge of. That was the level of knowledge. And then you see how everything that she does is golden. Everything that she does has value in the eyes of Allah. Everything that she does is the right thing. It would have been so easy. It would have been so easy for her to just sit at home after they took away her rights and be involved in teaching and educating and charity and these type of things. But no, even though she's alone, she realizes that she cannot be part of this system of injustice. She cannot be silent, and she cannot not stand up against the oppressor. So with all that basira, with all that insight, she does takes action. And she goes out of the home, she goes to the masjid, this lady who had never before addressed the public, because she knows her responsibility, she does so in such a beautiful way. She introduces herself and tells them that this is not right what you have done. This is the action of Sayyida Fatima. This is just some examples that we have from her life, and some insight as to why she is truly the Sayyida, why she truly is one who no one can be compared to except for the Ahlul Bayt themselves. We ask Allah to always make her be an exemplar and a role model for all of us. Salawat. Tonight is the night in which we commemorate the martyrdom of Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra. I would ask all of us to use this opportunity to open up our hearts. We don't know how much benefit and how much reward and how much spiritual cleansing can take place with even one bit of a tear that may be shed for the sake of this great lady tonight. Just as a prelude to the Masaib, I will mention an incident that took place one day in the city of Medina. One day they noticed in the morning, when everyone was asleep, as they began to rise for the Fajr prayers, they noticed that there was a white light that was filling their homes. They come to the Prophet and they ask him, "What is this white light? Can you explain it to us?" He tells them that, "Why don't you go to the house of Fatima and find out?" They go to her house and they observe what's happening. They report back to the Prophet. They say that we saw Fatima and she was sitting and doing her prayers. And from the beauty of the light of her face, there was a white light emanating. That was the white light that was filling the city of Medina. When Dhuhr time comes, the people of Medina notice that there's a yellow light which has filled their homes. Once again, they go to the Prophet. Once again, he directs them to the house of Fatima. They go to the house of Fatima and they find that she's standing in her mihrab, supplicating to Allah and praying to Him. And from the beauty of the radiance of Az-Zahra, a yellow light is emanating throughout the city. And then at nighttime, they see that there is a reddish light that is filling the city. Once again, they go to the Prophet. Once again, he directs them to the house of Fatima. And they see that the Lady Fatima is now sitting in her mihrab. And she is doing tasbih and tamjid and tahmid of Allah. She is praising Him and glorifying Him. And it is the redness from that light of her face that is filling the city. But for some reason, these people do not want the light of Fatima to fill their city anymore. It is in these nights leading up to tonight that Fatima, salamullahi alayha, calls her husband Imam Ali alayhi salam. She tells him that, "Oh Ali, I wish to give you my last will and testimony." Imam Ali alayhi salam tells her that, "Surely I will convey that testimony. I will try to keep that and fulfill it as you wish. Please tell me what it is." She tells him that, Oh Ali, you yourself take charge of performing my ghusl. You yourself conduct my funeral rites. You yourself recite my salatul mayyit. You yourself lower me into my grave. You take on the charge of burying me and level the earth over me. And Oh Ali, once you've done that, then please sit by my graveside at the position of my head facing my face and recite Quran for me and make dua for me. For indeed, it is a time when the one who has died is in need of some company from those who are living. And oh Ali, there's one more thing I want to tell you. I leave my children with you and I urge you to take care of them. As-salamu alayki ya Fatimatu Zahra. As-salamu alayki ya Qurrata Ayn Ar-Rasul. On a night like this, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam were outside of the home. They come back to their home and they see that, unlike usual, they are not greeted by their mother. There is somebody else who is standing there. It is Asma. Maybe they are thinking to themselves, "Why is she greeting us?" They ask her, "Where is our mother?" They are used to seeing their mother standing at the door welcoming them. She is quiet. She doesn't answer them. Maybe they're thinking that our mother is asleep. Maybe they have to go and see if they can wake her up and greet her. They go into her room and they see that she is stretched out. Imam Hussein alayhi salam goes to her and sees that she has died. She tells his brother, "Oh my brother, our mother has passed away. May Allah console you." They begin to cry out, "Ya Muhammada, Ya Ahmada. This is the day in which our mother has passed away."
They go to the masjid. They want to find their father to convey the news to him. They tell him what has happened. They find him praying in the masjid. Imam Ali alayhi salam, upon hearing the news, who is this? This is Ali. This is the brave warrior who has never backed down from an enemy. This is the one who was able to wrench the gate of Khaybar from its very post. This is the one who faced Amr ibn Abu Wud in Khandaq and did not back down. But when he hears about the loss of Fatima, he falls unconscious. They have to bring some water to make him wake up. Imam Ali is so weakened by what has taken place, he cannot even stand by himself. On one hand, Imam Hassan alayhi salam takes one of his arms, Imam Hussein takes the other, and together they make their way towards the home of Fatima. When Imam Ali alayhi salam gathers his strength, he cries out, Biman al-Aza, ya bint Muhammad. Who will I have now to console me, O daughter of Muhammad? You were my consolation until now. Who do I have after you? When the night time came, Imam Ali alayhi salam stays true to his promise. He bathes her, he puts her in the clothing, in the burial shroud. He tells Hassan, O Hassan, call Abu Dhar. Let us take the body of your mother to the graveyard. They recite the prayer on her. Imam Ali alayhi salam cries out and makes a dua. O Allah, this is the daughter of your prophet Fatima. You have taken her from the darknesses into the light. Imagine what they are thinking as they are burying the body of Fatima into the ground. As they start to put that dirt on the ground, it starts to fill up the hole in the ground. Fatima is being buried. Her body is now lost from sight. Who can console them? Who can they turn to? Imam Ali alayhi salam turns toward the grave of Rasulullah and begins to talk to him. It reminds me of another incident later on in Karbala when Zainab sees what they are going to do to Imam Hussein and no one is there to help her. She begins to call, Ya Rasulallah wa Muhammada, Hada Husseinun bil-Ara, this is Hussein, and there is no one to help him. Imam Ali alayhi salam addresses Rasulullah and he tells him, O Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, this was an amanat that you gave to me. لَقَدْ اسْتُرْجِعَتُ الْوَدِيعَةِ The amanah has now been given back to you. He might have been thinking that, O Rasulullah, when you gave me this amanah, my dear wife, her ribs were not broken as they are right now. There was no mark of a whip on her side. Imam Ali alayhi salam calls out to Fatima, لكل اجتماع من خليلين فرقة وإن بقائي عندكم لقليل. Every time there is a marriage between two who are dear friends, there has to be a separation, and I am only going to be with you for a little while. فإن افتقاد فاطمة بعد أحمد دليل على أن لا يدوم خليل. I lost Ahmad, I lost Rasulullah, and now I have lost Fatima. Is this not proof that two cannot be together in this world forever? Allah la'natullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. Wa sayya'lamu al-ladhina zalamu ayya munqalibin yanqalibun. Atmeh Hussain.